Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Kristen Agopian Show. Shout outs from everybody here in Studio B as we connect with our stations coast to coast via the Biz Talk Radio Network. Greetings to you all. Thank you so much for the emails this past week. I got a couple of texts to my phone, the Facebook feedback, just fantastic. Especially home improvement and construction guru Michael Z. Thanks for listening in. Linda T. listening in from Portland, Oregon. The ever fabulous five-woman frugal crew in Orlando. I love you guys. And Mitchell Meeks and Kathy Tarver, super fans listening in from the Super Talk Mississippi Network. This week's show is brought to you by our caring sponsors at Elite Rehab. Guys, we're going to do this shout out every single week. Quick and simple, because everybody out there knows a family that's fighting the effects of today's substance abuse epidemic. It is at every earning level, every educational level, every city, every town, and maybe, just maybe, it's your family tree that's battling it, or a neighbor, or someone you care about. And if someone you care about needs help, pick up the phone, not just for their sake, but for yours, okay? From the support team as well, call the professionals at 800-932-4082. That number one more time, 800-932-4082. The number's on our website as well at brilliantfrugalliving.com. Help the ones you love and help yourself. Put that chapter behind them. 800-932-4082. Sitting here, coffee in hand. This is a really good coffee. Somebody turned me on to this. It actually has. It's going to sound crazy. It's a super spiced up coffee. It's got cinnamon and a little bit of turmeric, I think, and some other cool stuff. You think it's going to be a little wacky, but holy moly, it is super yums. Looking out the studio windows at another gorgeous cityscape. It is so nice out there. It's getting warmer again. We had some snow this past week, but it was just enough snow to cancel school for the kids. They got a couple of two-hour delays, but it didn't really slow down traffic, so it's the best of all worlds. It's all good. And we're another week closer to springtime, getting that extra, what is it? It's like an extra 7 minutes over the course of the past week. We got an extra 7 minutes in the morning. Extra 7 minutes in the evening. It's starting to catch up with us, guys. The warmer weather's on the way. It's all good. And today we're talking about something. It's a group that is near and dear to my heart. You may have seen them on all of your favorite little storefront corners, selling their little cookies with their little wonderful, fresh-faced, enthusiastic eyes just beaming at you. And you're looking at these cookies thinking, oh my God, these cookies are the crack cocaine of the clean world. Let's face it, a good box of Thin Mints can really cure me of all of my ills, you know, of the day. But we're thinking, oh my gosh, they're so expensive. Oh my gosh, you know, that's really ridiculously pricey. I can go into the store right here, right, you know, next to where you're peddling your little cookies and go in and find similar cookies for a fraction of the price. What am I doing buying these cookies? Now, I am a proud beanie owner from my troop back in Green Bay, Wisconsin, back in the late 70s. I had a ball, made friends there that I still have today. My beautiful daughter, Katie, she was a Girl Scout. She's now leaning into sports, but all of her friends from Girl Scouts are still friends today. And I wanted to go into a little detail as to why investing in these, yes, overpriced, but dang tasty little cookies is actually an investment in something very special, all right? This is going to be something that gives you a little more free rein to purchase these cookies with a little more abandon, a little less, you know, nutritional guilt, a little less money guilt, because, yeah, they're a little overpriced, because I put together this column for the past week. I have to give credit to my editor. It was her idea. And just talking about the frugal attributes of Girl Scouts. And basically, I titled it Frugalistas in Training. You are going to love some of these facts and figures, because honest to God, buying that box of cookies could save so many different parts of humanity down the road. In no particular order, here we go, some info about the Girl Scouts. First of all, Girl Scouts started just over 100 years ago. For all of you fellow Scouts, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, you know, alumni or not, Juliette Gordon Lowe. You guys remember that name? Of course, Tony doesn't know that name. But yeah, there you go. Intern over here, she knows the name. Organized the first Girl Scout troop in March 1912. So we're coming up on the, what is that, 107-year anniversary in Savannah, Georgia. Okay. And here, I'm just to make the case that the 2.3 million members currently in Girl Scouts, a similar number I'm thinking must be in Boy Scouts, so we're talking at least 5 million Americans in Scouts, not only are enjoying a fabulous educational experience, but I'm here to show you that a little bit of Scout training, Boy Scout, Girl Scout, is helping them head into adulthood far better equipped for life's ups and downs, physical, emotional, financial. Don't believe me? Enjoy these thin, minty facts. You ready for this? It's through Scouts, both Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, that many of these kids enjoy their first field trips, their sports experiences, you know, everything, community service projects, cultural exchanges, and more. Where are they going to get that these days? In my opinion, that what I just said, you know, the various first experiences is somewhat better at building character and respect and team building and sound decision making and leadership than, say, spending every afternoon playing video games. Okay? You know what I'm saying? And when you're purchasing a box of cookies, which in my mind, a small, I think, related side note, I like to tell myself that when I'm buying these cookies to better humanity, the carb count simply does not matter. So there you go. It's a nice win-win for everybody, okay? So I'm sure there's a study or two out there regarding, you know, being in these groups that build character and team building and sound decision-making and just, I love the teamwork aspect of this. And again, better than playing the video games all day. Tell me I'm wrong. Next, and I love this one, both Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts have a proven track record, okay, of creating outstanding adult leaders. All right, here's some facts from the Girl Scouts, and I'm willing to bet it's mirrored on the Boy Scouts as well. 80% of women executives and female business owners were former Scouts, 80%, as well as 2/3 of American congresswomen. The smart congresswomen out there. You got some dud congresswomen in Congress right now. I'm the first to admit it. But I'm willing to bet you the smartest, brightest, most team-building, complimentary, able to work with others, willing to bet you anything, they were former Girl Scouts. Oh, and also, you ready for this with regards to former Scouts? The first female space shuttle commander, Secretary of State, Supreme Court Justice, Evening Network News Anchor, President of Harvard, and Secretary of Homeland Security, all former Scouts. Coincidence? I think not. Next. Oh my God, I should have just led with this one or kept it till the end. No, I'm saying it right now. Are you ready for this? And I'm willing to bet this is the same for Boy Scouts as well. Research shows that Girl Scouts are significantly less likely to become teenage mothers, to drop out of school, or to use drugs. I'm reading this one again because I'm so happy at this. Research shows that Girl Scouts, and I'm willing to bet Boy Scouts as well, significantly less likely to become teenage parents, to drop out of school, or to use drugs. Just one of those would be a fantastic result. But that three, that trifecta, less likely to become teenage parents, less likely to drop out of school, less likely to use drugs. I'm not even going to try to put a price tag on that one. My head will explode. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Next time you're heading to the store, you're out on a perfectly, completely unrelated errand, you're getting the oil changed, you're going grocery shopping, you're, you know, clothes shopping, you got to just whatever, and you see these beautiful girls or these very nice young men with their popcorn tins or the girls with the cookies, and you're thinking, it's too overpriced. Oh my God, it's just ridiculous pricing. Yeah, you know what it is. And guess what the trade-off is? I have, and I'm going on here. Well, how much time we have? We got about another minute or so. This is fantastic. Okay. I love this one. In today's economy, volunteering and community service are more urgently needed than ever. And by that, I'm saying, I'm not talking about dangerous stuff because I never want Katie to do the, you know, litter on the side of the road or whatever. I'm not a fan of that at all. However, places that Katie volunteered was when they did volunteer work at local senior homes. They did volunteer work for local, just helping homeless groups and putting together packages for them. They put together amazing care packages for soldiers overseas. They put together just meals for people that were then delivered by others. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Each year, holy moly, Girl Scouts alone, let's just double this number considering Boy Scouts are, you know, same numbers. Each year, Scouts provide nearly 160 million hours in community service, okay? You think about how much volunteer work is needed out there. Scouts provide nearly 160 million hours in community service. Better still, research shows, this is research, guys, shows that former Scouts vote more and volunteer more than people who were not Scouts. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. And I want to hear from you as well. If you guys are proud alumni with your Scout uniform still somewhere in the attic, you know, this is from decades ago or maybe recently, or you have kids or grandkids that are currently in Scouts, I want to hear from you as well as to what you feel personally the benefit they pulled from this was. You already know I'm a huge fan. I want to hear from you as well. Guys, hang tight for a second. We'll be right back right after this. We are back with the Kristen Agopian Show. I have been looking so forward to this interview. This is something that's kind of near and dear to my heart and a lot of friends of mine as well. Each year, I don't know if you guys know this, nearly 60,000 premature babies in the U.S. are born with a very low birth rate. And on top of that, one out of five have a life-threatening opening in the heart because being a new parent isn't quite stressful enough. Now we have that kind of thing to contend with. But in all seriousness, guys, it's days like today and interviews like this where I really, really love my job even more than usual. What a tremendous age we live in. Joining us via our newsmaker line is Anthony Daly, whose beautiful baby Tony was born prematurely with this heart defect and needed urgent treatment, as well as Dr. Evan Zahn, who implanted, you ready for this? The world's first and only device approved specifically for premature babies. Guys, it's smaller than a pea in baby Tony's heart. Gentlemen, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us, Kristen.
Thanks for having us.
Dr. Zahn, I'm going to start with you. We're talking about, it's called a PDA. What is a PDA? And tell me, I mean, I had two beautiful babies. They were both premature. One was 4.5 weeks, one was 5.5 weeks. We didn't have any heart problems. They thankfully inherited my appetite and all was well, so, you know, a couple weeks out. But in all seriousness, what is a PDA and how many babies are you seeing affected with this heart defect?
So a PDA is actually a fairly large communication between our two circulations, one that goes to our body and one that goes to our lungs. And actually all babies are born with this, but normally it's genetically programmed to close within the first couple of hours to days of life. Unfortunately, the more premature you are born, the greater likelihood that that system just isn't fully developed and your PDA, this big communication, stays open. So it's actually the most common, by a large magnitude, the most common heart issue that we face in the premature babies. And again, the smaller you are, the more common it is and the more dangerous it can be, because when you have this large blood vessel, it can steal blood from the circulation that's supposed to be going to your body and pour it into these already stressed out, underdeveloped lungs. And at the same time, it's stealing that vital blood supply from other organs like the brain, like the intestines, and can cause significant or contribute to significant damage to those organs as well.
Wow. Wow. Now, a lot of people aren't going to be familiar with that particular phrase or the symptoms. Now, you briefly touched on it, but what are the symptoms of a PDA?
In premature babies, the most common symptom we see is breathing difficulties and respiratory distress. And again, these babies are born with immature lungs, so then to have the additive burden of extra blood pouring into those lungs really hurts them. And many, many, in fact, most of our babies are already on respirators by the time we get called. Then they can also have symptoms like little Tony had, where the bowel is not seeing the proper amount of blood supply, and that can have very serious consequences, even bowel death, which can ultimately be fatal for a baby. So it's very serious.
Wow. One more question for you, then I'm swinging over to Anthony. Tell us a bit more about this amazing device called the Abbott Piccolo device and why this is turning into such a significant advance for premature babies out there.
Yeah, we really believe that the approval by the FDA of the Abbott Piccolo device is a historic approval. It's the first device ever designed and tested for, specifically with premature babies in mind and approved by the FDA. Before this, we had nothing approved for babies with this heart problem of this size. And what we were left with was either treating these babies with intravenous medicines, which sometimes work and sometimes don't, or just watching them and accepting that they have to have this, or sending them for surgery, which of course on a 2-pound baby has its own set of risks and complications and questions about the long-term benefit of that. So now we have this minimally invasive, tiny little device, as you mentioned, much smaller than a pea, that we can put into these babies' hearts with just a tiny little catheter from their leg, close the PDA in a matter of minutes, take the catheter out, and just put a Band-Aid on the leg. So we really think it's going to have a profound effect on scores of babies who are born prematurely around the country.
Wow. Just what my jaw is hanging open as you're describing this procedure. What an age we live in. Anthony, I'm going to swing over to you, if I could. You've got this beautiful new baby in front of you, and you've got, you know, your mind's racing. I've been there twice. When and how did you find out that Tony had this PDA? What were the symptoms?
So Tony was born actually at 26 weeks and 6 days, and he weighed 2 pounds, 3 ounces. So about 14 weeks early. Within 2 days, the NICU doctors had explained to us that his PDA was open, and that they, like Dr. Zahn mentioned, were going to take a wait and see approach. Unfortunately, about 2 weeks after that, it took a turn for the worse. Tony was not getting enough blood flow to his intestines, which was then causing food issues as they were doing the IVs and everything else to sort of nourish him through these early stages, and they needed to act. So if it hadn't been for the Abbott Piccolo device, chances are Tony would have had to have open heart surgery, which would have presented a whole other scenario of risky side effects, and his recovery time would have been immense, if not having lingering issues. So they went in, and Dr. Zahn planted the device. It took, and really from that day on, our time in the NICU, instead of an up and down roller coaster of health issues, he really turned around the corner and took off from there in terms of getting himself to a place where they finally were able to discharge him a couple months later.
That is incredible. How's that beautiful baby doing today? Is there anything, any lingering effects, anything other than, you know, putting more gray hair on your head, which is every kid's job, just, you know, aging is prematurely. But in all seriousness, how's that beautiful baby doing today?
He's doing exactly that. I've got a few more gray hairs than I did when we started this journey. But it's been a bundle of joy, absolute love, and he's had no side effects. In fact, we don't even unfortunately get to see Dr. Zahn anymore. Only as a friend. He's been completely cleared of any future checkups with regards to his heart. He's 3.5 years old, running wild, and as you mentioned, he's wearing me and my wife out. So it's great.
Stuff. It's the thing that's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Please let my beautiful kids be wild and crazy and totally healthy. And then later on, you're like, double-edged sword. Why are my kids so wild and healthy? And oh my God. I mean, I hear you. I'm right there with you. In all seriousness, Doctor, back to you. We talked about Tony's outlook. God bless. Wonderful stuff. What is the general outlook, percentage speaking, for preemies with a PDA who are treated with this amazing device? What's it looking like?
It looks very, very, very good. I've been doing in this business a long time, and this has been one of the most gratifying procedures we've been fortunate enough to be involved in. The babies get treated. It's what we think of as a one and done. We close the PDA. This device gets grown over by normal tissue in the body. It never needs to be replaced. We see the babies for a few visits after they're discharged, and if everything looks well at 6 months, which it has in every baby we've taken care of to date, we discharge them from cardiology follow-up, and then they just need to go see the regular pediatrician for routine checkups. So we expect very good things from this procedure and these babies in general.
That is incredible. Where can our listeners, your brand new fans, go for more information on this? Is there a website we can head to?
There is. There's a website, abbottpiccolo.com. We have several centers around the country that are up and implanting in places like Columbus and Detroit, Seattle, St. Louis, Philadelphia, Orlando, Los Angeles, Memphis, and hopefully many more centers soon to be up and coming and implanting.
Oh, my gosh, this is fantastic. You guys got an open mic anytime. I knew the time was going to fly. Outstanding. Again, Dr. Zahn, Anthony Daly, Tony, give that beautiful son of yours a big hug from the crew over here at the show. I actually have a good friend of mine from high school who now has like a 1.5-year-old daughter. Sounds very similar to your son. We'll talk off the air about your ideas on arranged marriages. You know, just throwing that out there, just a couple of ideas. But thank you so much for all that you do. Join us anytime, and God bless. Okay,
thank you very much.
And we'll be right back, gang, right after this. Cheap and small, not too. And we are back with the Kristen Agopian Show, half past the hour, and here with all of the latest, most up-to-date info on buying, selling, renting, flipping. My favorite co-star by far, the gentleman sitting to my right, Dad. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you very much, sweetheart. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to do this segment for your show. I love it. My favorite part of the week.
My favorite part of the week, too. Now, we were recording for your show in Philadelphia just before this, and you had, as usual, your great plethora of information, very up-to-date. One of the things that I took from it, I love how we're coming up on the springtime market, and there's no really slow time in real estate these days, but getting ramped up and getting prepped for this upcoming spring market, there's nothing like it to put you in the catbird seat if you're thinking of buying, renting, selling, flipping. Get in there. The water's fine.
Yeah, generally in real estate, there are times when the market is moving along pretty quickly, and there are times when it's moving along more quickly.
Yep.
So, thinking of selling your house? I get that question a lot.
I'll bet.
John, what is the best time to put my house on the market? And my answer always is...
Now.
That's right.
Do it.
Now.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Make it happen.
Now, there are a lot of people who say, well, you know, John, I'm thinking of putting my house on the market in the spring. And a couple of examples about that. I dealt with a young couple last year in October, I think it was, and their house hadn't sold, been on the market with another real estate firm for a number of months.
Okay.
And their realtor had told them, well, look, it's October, things are slowing down, I think you ought to take it off the market and put it back on when the spring market really kicks in. And they said, well, what do you think about that? I contacted them after their listing was off the market. What do you think about that? I said, I think that's bad advice. I think you never know when the perfect buyer for your house is going to show up. And it could be tomorrow. And if your house isn't on the market, you're going to miss him or her or them. So they put their house on the market in middle of October. Admittedly, slower time of the year.
Sure.
And inside of 2 weeks, we had an offer they accepted, and we settled sometime in November.
Fantastic.
So that's an example of the kind of thing that can happen. A more recent example was contacted about 3 weeks ago by some sellers who are moving out of state, out of Pennsylvania, moving to Colorado. And they said, are you interested in listing our house? I said, I certainly am. I certainly am. So went through the normal pricing processes, marketing processes. We put it on the market a week ago Monday.
Yep.
A week ago Monday. And inside of 7 days, we had 3 competitive offers.
Wow.
Okay. And I led them through the process of evaluating all of the offers and just recommending which one they take. And as I say, within... on the 8th day after putting the house on the market, we had a completed agreement of sale.
Sounds like a hot market to me.
Mm-hmm. And it is, because right now in this particular area, we have only like 3 months worth of inventory. So that is, by definition,
that's
a hot market.
Fantastic.
That is, by definition, a hot market.
And I was talking about this. I heard this on the news this morning, and I wanted to bring it up when we were talking today. But there are, you know, there's always some new government survey or whatever where they take zillions of people. This is not a small survey. But one of the takeaways I had from that report was talking about how 70% of Americans strongly believe that they will be making more money this time next year than they are right now. And that's at like a 20...
And that's a beautiful thing.
That's a beautiful thing. And that's not only that, but it's at a 20-year high. And I have to think to myself, when you have that sort of mentality and that sort of energy and that sort of vigor in the economy, people are going to be thinking about maybe buying another car, maybe sending their kids to a different school, maybe, you know, who knows what, maybe a home improvement project. But one of the biggest things I think people are going to put pen to paper on is thinking about selling their house and buying a new one or just leaping into the market to begin with. So I have to think we are ramping up for a tremendous springtime, summertime season coming up. It's all good.
I think so, yeah. The people who forecast home sales... who should know what they're doing, say we're going to have a much nicer year this year than we had in 2018.
We deserve that.
And in 2018, home sales were off a little bit. Around the country, the typical pattern was, yes, prices were up 3%, 4%, 5%.
Okay.
sales were down 2, 3, 4%.
Interesting.
Numbers of sales. And that was true in the Philadelphia area and in most areas around the country.
Yeah.
But the answer to thinking of selling your home, what's the best time to put it on the market? The time is now.
Absolutely.
The time is now.
And that can be intimidating, guys. You know, we're throwing out these numbers. This is great. You know, the numbers that we're that dad's getting for the houses that he's selling and how fast they're selling. It can be intimidating. Whether you're currently a homeowner who's already gone through this, if you're not a homeowner yet and you're thinking about doing it, but people have done it millions of times over with the help of a good realtor. Get your hands on one of them. If you're here in the Philadelphia area, get a hold of dad. Dip a toe in, guys. This is the kind of move that you make. This is the essence of brilliant frugal living. Putting your money where it is going to benefit you hugely, not only, you know, in the near future, but also down the road. There's nothing quite like it.
Yep. And just to give you an idea of why it's more advantageous to get your home on the market right now, typically, you got about 1,900,000 homes on the market nationally.
Wow. Okay.
I'm sorry, in May and June. And you've only got 1,500,000 homes on the market in January and February. That's
okay.
About a 25% increase.
Yeah, it's true.
I know when I'm going on the market, I'd much rather be going against only 75 other homes as opposed to 100 other homes.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So the big advantage of putting it on the market right now is that you're going to be competing against fewer homes for the same dollars and for the same homeowners.
Pros
so,
and cons.
So you're thinking about doing it now, folks, I would say get a hold of a good realtor. And here's how I would suggest you go about finding a good realtor.
Yes.
I would always recommend that you interview at least two, preferably three or four.
I know.
In your area. And I would suggest you call some of the prominent realtors. And you know who the prominent realtors are.
Sure.
Keller Williams is probably in your area. And I recommend Keller Williams very highly because of our training and our agent support. I do believe that in general, you're going to get more things done right with a Keller Williams agent than you will with agents from other companies. But I would call a Keller Williams office, maybe a couple of Keller Williams offices in the larger cities.
Sure.
You're going to have a couple of different Keller Williams offices. Two or three of our other competitors, and then interview the people. And by the way, I would always recommend that you never do business with an agent who's been in the business for less than 5 years.
What would you say? Say there's a million realtors in the country right now. What percentage of those do you feel have been in the industry for 5 years or less? It's got to be, I'm guessing, over half, don't you think?
Boy, I don't know the answer
to
that,
either.
Chrissy. I would guess it's about half.
Yep.
I do remember when I was doing my pre-licensing work, this is 18 years ago now, the instructor in one of the classes one day said, you know, there's a lot of turnover in the real estate business, folks.
Yep.
And he said, take a look to the person at your left and the person on your right.
Guess what?
And he said, that makes three of you, right? And he said, two of you will be out of the real estate business inside of 2 years.
And you made it.
And I made it.
That's right.
And I made it. So,
good
yeah,
stuff.
There is a lot of turnover. When real estate times are bad, people skedaddle out of the industry.
Yeah.
When real estate times are good, people skedaddle into the industry because they think that, oh, gee, all I got to do is sit around, wait for the phone to ring, list up some houses, and I collect 6% on every one.
Exactly.
Wrong on so many different levels.
So
I would
like
say
that.
Never,
it's
ever
a good guideline.
Do business with a realtor who's been in the business for less than 5 years.
Yep.
Unless that person is being mentored by a very, very experienced realtor. And that's one of the reasons that I'm so high on Keller Williams with our training programs and the way we train new agents. So interview at least two, preferably three or four. Never somebody been in the business for less than 5 years.
Yep.
Unless that person is being very closely supervised and mentored by an experienced realtor.
Seems very reasonable.
All righty. But if you're thinking of selling your house, now is the perfect time. Find yourself that good realtor and get it done.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's empowering. It's amazing. It can be scary as heck. So many of the greatest accomplishments in your life can fit those same adjectives. But I'm telling you what, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It is so worth it. Make it happen.
And now we're going to talk, Chrissy, about why home ownership matters to people more than ever. Now, for example, the National Association of Realtors did a survey. They do lots of surveys.
They do. They do good surveys,
on the
though.
Difference in net worth. Adults, 65
Ooh.
Years and older in this country.
Okay, so retirees, close
net
to retirees.
Net worth of homeowners, net worth of renters.
Interesting.
Who do you think had the higher net worth?
Well, I would guess the homeowners. We talk about when it's just, you know,
that's
standard.
That's a pretty safe guess.
Americans across the board, you know, they have that. What did you say that one time? You were talking about how Americans in general, if you're homeowners, you have a net worth about 40, 45 times greater than a renter. I have to assume. Is that even more skewered for retirees? Is it even a greater multiple for that?
Well, different surveys come up with different multiples. But
sure.
Typically the multiple is the homeowner is going to have a net worth of 43 to 50 times more than the renter. And this last one was that the adult 65 plus homeowner Had a net worth of about $320,000.
Nice.
Of which not quite half was the equity in the home.
Okay.
And the renter had a net worth of about $7,000.
You want to know something?
So 7,000 versus 320,000, that's about a 50 multiple.
I know retirees who are renters. I know retirees who are homeowners. And that is pretty spot on, to be honest.
Yep.
Depressingly spot on.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You know what else grabbed me? We talked about these same numbers during your local show in Philadelphia about how the net worth of a homeowner is 300,000 plus. But the equity in their home is only due to about half of that. That means there's 150 grand that's not due to their home ownership. That's the ripple effect we talk about when you own your own home.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of thing where you're going to have investments, everything else. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that broke that down that way. That's very effective.
Yeah,
good stuff.
The problem is the fact that you own a house is going to get you thinking about doing other things.
Exactly.
Maybe investing in real estate. And by the way, now is the best time we are going to see for the rest of our real estate buying lifetimes to either buy that house or to buy the investment property.
Exciting.
And that's not to say in 6 months or a year, real estate will not be a good investment. It will.
Oh, sure.
But it won't be as good as it is right now, folks.
Jump in, gang.
But anyway, thinking of selling your house, this is a perfect time. Make sure you find the right kind of a realtor and why home ownership matters now more than ever. And kid, looking at the clock, I think we're about out of time.
All great.
Thanks for listening,
news.
Everybody.
The time always flies. We'll be right back, gang, right after this. And we are back with the Kristen Agopian Show, swinging back around to how you can invest in a better future guilt-free by picking up a couple of boxes of Girl Scout cookies. We talked earlier in the hour about this, and I am ever more convinced. You know why? Because first of all, you know, we can't smoke anymore. We can't drink anymore. I was never much of a smoker or a drinker. But a good box of cookies can really put me back in my happy place after a crazy, crazy day. And yeah, you know, you see these beautiful Girl Scouts, you see these handsome young little men in uniform selling their popcorn tins, you know, whatever that season is. And you think to yourself, doggone it, is it too expensive? I'm trying to save money. Yeah, it is too expensive and you are trying to save money. But here, you're hearing it here from Chris Agopian, giving you permission to indulge, air quotes, indulge in some of these fabulous yummies from these gorgeous, adorable, uniformed kids. And here's why. Because when you're investing in the Girl Scouts and in the Boy Scouts, whether you've got a kid that you're schlepping back and forth and you're thinking, my God, the schedule is crazy. What are we doing with Scouts? Guess what? Scouts have been around for a good long time, a lot longer than your average video game, okay? And when it comes to getting kids ready for the real world, getting them ready for any kind of experience in business, any kind of experience in teamwork, any kind of experience a lot of times with their first camping trip, with working with others, with working with the public, with showing respect while you're wearing a uniform, if I could be so hokey as to say that, because it's just absolute God's honest truth. Think long and hard about investing in a wonderful treat for yourself and in ways that are going to benefit the next generation huge, okay? First of all, and I have all of these wonderful little factoids in front of me, earlier in the hour, we were talking about how there's roughly about 5 million kids out there currently who are, you know, card-carrying Scouts, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, and I'm thinking basically Katie is my oldest. She's the one that did Girl Scouts. Robbie's more into his sports. But when it came to the Scouts, and she's not in it anymore. She's got a lot of stuff going on with other activities. She was in it for about 5 years, loved it, had some great experiences, is still friends with these other incredibly wonderful, hardworking young ladies where we wouldn't have known them otherwise. But here's one of the best things that I wanted to bring up. I wasn't able to bring this up before the last break. But because we're saving the best for last year, it is statistically known that girls lag behind boys in financial literacy. We all know some boys that aren't great at financial literacy yet. We all know girls that aren't financially literate, you know, quite yet. But it's statistically shown from people with far bigger pockets than I have to do these huge studies. It's statistically known that girls lag behind boys in financial literacy. And here's your sober, sombering moment for the show. American households, American households headed by single women is one of the fastest growing poverty groups. I'm going to say that again. American households headed by single women is one of the fastest growing groups and one of the fastest growing poverty groups. Girl Scouting and scouting in general, because boys could always use some extra lessons in this as well. Scouting offers one of the most successful financial literacy programs for girls in the world. And I'm willing to bet that it doesn't do any harm to the boys with the Boy Scouts as well. So I'm just going to read that one more time. Girl Scouting, this wonderful, in any kind of scouting, Boy Scouting as well, where yes, you got to take a night every week, every couple of weeks, and you're hanging out, you're taking the kids there, you're thinking, I should be doing other stuff, should I be buying the cookies, should I be supporting the cookies are so expensive, this popcorn's crazy expensive. All of the above statements are true. However, in this wonderful, amazing world we live in today, with its fast pace and a bit of craziness, where else are they going to get some of this fantastic financial literacy lessons than they do in Scouts? I want you to think about this. You got great kids. You got great grandkids. Maybe they're older. Maybe they're grown. Where did they learn financial literacy? All right. Or where are they learning financial literacy? When you're in Scouts, you're learning financial literacy. Talk about a way, talk about a lesson that you're going to take into your adult life, and either you're going to expound on it and be financially successful, or you're not going to have those lessons and you're going to have a lot less of a shot of that. Long story short, if you're a former scout like me, a business owner, complete with a somewhat highly opinionated, somewhat formidable financial skills, and my, I'm proud to say, my circa, 1978 sash and beanie in my folks' attic, or if you're the hardworking parent of an impressionable young kid whom you're trying to select some quality after-school programs for, do yourself and them a huge favor and think long and hard about Scouts. And if you don't have kids in your household right now, you don't have kids in your family tree, you know, you're whatever you're doing, and you see these kids out and about, maybe the weather's a little cold, maybe it's a little rainy, maybe it's a little crappy, and they're still standing there adorable in their uniforms. Remember what that used to be like? You know, when you used to be a scout, you were that age, and you're like, oh my gosh, it would make my day to be able to, you know, sell a couple of things of cookies. Make that kid's day. Make that young lady's day. Make that young man's day when he's out selling the popcorn. Well, around here in Pennsylvania, it's popcorn. I'm guessing it's the same way nationwide for the Boy Scouts. Think long and hard about how those agreed, overpriced, yet delicious, so dang good items are going to have a ripple effect through the next generation that might just help. I don't think I'm stretching this here. That might just help us save taxes down the road, too. When you have kids that are learning how to be financially literate, those kids are far less likely to grow up needing taxpayer-funded assistance for anything. Am I right? I feel like I'm right. It makes perfect sense. It's a great place for them to learn it. It's a great place to learn teamwork, something we're not learning as much as we should be. It's a great place to you as adults to help support that kind of behavior. And again, you heard it here. I'm giving you full permission to splurge a bit, buy a box or two, or in my case, five. I love the Thin Mints, man. They're all so dang good. Yes, get out there. If you have the chance and you see Scouts before you selling their stuff, take a look at those fresh little faces, slow yourself down a little bit. Put yourself in their shoes. Put yourself in the shoes of this, you know, what I just wrote this past week in the column and how it's going to help them down the road. Take out a couple of bills. Or better yet, these kids actually got me because they now have an app on their phones, which I never had circa 1978 in my little beanie. They can now take a credit card and with the help of a little app on their phones that are probably more sophisticated than mine, you can even charge it these days. So everyone's a winner. Get out there, guys. Have a cookie or two. I give you full permission. Thanks for all you do to support the world. Keep it healthy, happy, and frugal. And until next week, save those pennies, pay with cash, and you all stay frugal out there. Cheap.